Maybe you should keep your nose out of other people's business.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 3, Episode 5, Non-Sexual Healing. So, in other words, healing. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave. Before I complain about yet another Soups in a Propes episode title, I have news about Again With This.
Yeah.
Episode 27 dropping December 18th. Let's watch Heather Locklear in 1991 TV movie Lethal Charm. Also featuring Barbara Eden and David James Elliott, apparently.
Whoa.
And it is on YouTube, so you can watch along with us and see if Locklear is honing her Amanda chops in this bad boy prior to Melrose, and if she is honing them on Jag.
Also the name of the worst bowl of cereal I've ever had.
Worst and last. Anyway, if you were not poisoned by breakfast cereal, and even if you were, really, join us at patreon.com/againwiththis. Once you've joined, you have access to the entire archive of all the extras that we've ever done about magazines, about terrible movies. We would love to have you. Please join.
Indeed. All right, let us get into non-sexual healing, starting with our B plot. Amanda loses another parent while Billy plays mind games with Allison. I mean, I don't know which of them gets the worst end of this, honestly.
But anyway. I continue to be like, whatever the word is, that if you're baffled and enraged, bafflaged.
Sure.
By Mongo's struggle with heel turn. Like, the whole thing is so stupid.
Well, the thing I keep forgetting is, like, the thing that came up in the, for our Patreon supporters, as they've already heard by now, the Rolling Stone Melrose Place cover story, where we learned or were reminded that for the early going of the show, Courtney Thorne Smith and Andrew Shue were dating, and by this point had broken up. So that gives this plot line, like, a whole other dimension of, like, dude, were you working out some shit? Like, did you go to the writers and ask them to, like, you know, put smarter lines in your mouth that were mean to your ex-girlfriend than you could come up with yourself? Because that's kind of how it seems.
I mean, but then they're still not convincing, though.
True.
But he just, like, you'll see this in the visual aids, but there are, like, 15 versions of, like, whatever you think, ooh, sounds like, but as drawn by the family circus guy, that is what fucking Shue is trying to do with his face.
God, it's true. All right,
let's get into it. He looks like he has a Sour Patch Kid in his nostril. It does not work.
All right, Amanda's in her office.
Let's get it over with.
When she gets a courier envelope that contains a video tape. But she pops into the VCR in her office. Boy, I remember those days.
Yeah, fancy.
Clip two.
Amanda, I'm sorry to have to say goodbye to you like this. I know how hard this is on you. But there really was no other way. By the time you see this, I'll be halfway to Mexico. Jake has agreed to take me on his boat. It's like I always said, every man has his price. Even your precious Jake. All I ask is, please, honey, try not to hate me.
Wow, shitty to the last. Palmer, you suck.
Yeah. That cackle.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the actor, like, enjoying his last day on set. Like,
no doubt.
Okay.
So she goes straight to the marina where a couple of cops are standing on the dock. And the fact that there were like 50 police officers at the complex when Michael was mildly insulted by a car, and now there are only two guys here after a fucking boat exploded, is very funny. But anyway, she tries to figure out what's going on with Jake and or the pretty lady. And the cop readily tells her how it blew up off the coast of Catalina that morning. So Billy is at work, when a cute blonde comes up and introduces herself as Elizabeth Wyatt. She is his new assistant, well, his and Allison's. She immediately reveals herself as a weirdo by remembering that he was on the cover, of Escapade, for the dating service article he did with Celia. I mean, I remember the article, but like, he was on the cover. Why didn't that come up on the show?
Oh, God, justice for Celia also.
Seriously. Anyway, Elizabeth wants to know what she is supposed to do. Typing, editing. She offers coffee, but he's a one cup a day guy. Ugh. Shut up.
Oh, my God.
And I say that as a zero cup a day guy, but seriously, like, what a weird identity to have.
Well,
anyway,
I mean, it's one thing to just not drink coffee, but if you drink coffee, you drink coffee. Like, right. I just need one cup a day. Like, oh, you're one of those natural high people. Fuck out of here.
If he's getting some for himself, how does she take hers? He wants to know, which, like, okay, working girl reference. And her answer is even weirder than his. She likes it black and decaf. What's the point? Why don't you both just switch to tea and shut the fuck up anyway?
Why don't you both throw yourselves out a window? Sorry, it's too far. It's only coffee, which maybe I should switch to decaf. But
Dave seemed like he had something to add. No? True. True. Indeed.
Well, decaf has some caffeine, but it's just a weird, I don't know.
Yeah.
But both of them need to shut up is the point.
So this is when Allison comes around a corner with a face like a slapped ass at the sight of Billy talking to a blonde who isn't her and saying that if you're new to LA and your name starts with a vowel, you get lunch for free on Wednesdays. Such a long walk, bro, but fine. Elizabeth says today is Monday, but Wednesday works. And then Allison rudely interrupts to talk to Billy about something or other without, I don't know, introducing herself to this colleague. So Billy tries to make Allison talk to him with Elizabeth right there, but Elizabeth and her better hair voluntarily depart so that Allison can annoy us all. Clip three.
You know, working together is tough enough as it is without you flirting with every woman in the office.
Flirting? She came over to introduce herself. Employers and employees have to talk. Breeds a harmonious working place.
If you're new to LA and your name starts with a vowel, you get a free lunch. Use that same line on me when I first met you.
Did it work? Then you taught him that it works.
Policy is policy.
Also, harmonious working place. Who wrote that line? Borat?
Also, Courtney Thorne-Smith is doing a thing in this episode with her where she like keeps pinching her tongue, just the tip of her tongue between her teeth. And I captured it every instance for the visual aids because it made me so enraged. So I don't know what this actor choice is, but get a load of it in the visual aids because it happens a bunch and I don't know why. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I think we are really supposed to be on her side, but I think the writers actually fucking hate her.
It does seem that way. Yeah. So that night, Joe comes up to complain to Amanda about a plumbing issue and finds Amanda sitting alone in the dark. Amanda curtly gives her the plumber's name and tells her to deal with it herself and give Amanda the bill. And instead of just doing that, so it's done, Joe crabs that day laborers are the landlord's department. So honestly, Amanda's kind of within her rights when she just responds by wearily telling Joe to get out. Like, get out. Like, here's the number. Go call. Yes, I should do that. But like, whatever. It's 2 seconds on the phone. Joe, you maniac. Anyway, Joe finally notices that something is wrong. And Amanda tells her what she knows, ending with there being no known survivors to the boat explosion. And she'll call Joe when she knows anything. This was probably all very sad when people thought there was a chance that Jake was actually dead. He's not, though. Spoiler. The next day, Allison comes out to the courtyard before work to ask Amanda to move either her desk or Billy's. Fair question, but ask it at the office. Boundary blursmo. Amanda is obviously not in the mood for Allison's petty bullshit right now. Clip four.
Billy's desk is a big problem for you?
Yeah.
Any problems with your new chair?
No, it's fine.
Good. Then let's compare problems, shall we? The pretty lady blew to smithereens with enough explosives to level a city block.
Jake and my father were on it, are missing and presumed dead. But don't you worry. I'll make moving your desk a top priority.
Honest to God.
I mean,
admittedly, Allison could not know this, but also, like, talk work shit at work.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I hate to use the phrase in Allison's defense, but it's like, since your very recent, like, unresolved ex-boyfriend and your fugitive father both just, you know, got turned into shark kibble, maybe don't go to work.
That is fair. Fair.
Not to victim blame.
But in which case, like, then Amanda wouldn't even have to deal with questions like this until she is back at work, you know?
Also, just change desks with someone. Nobody gives a shit where you sit.
That's truly the thing. Like, it would be different if they were in some kind of, like, tri-bullpen situation with Elizabeth there, too. But we have seen no evidence of this, so...
Yeah, get a desk on the balcony at D&D. It's fine. You'll love it.
Boy, it's been a while since we've seen the business balcony. Wonder how those guys are doing. They took the stairs down. They've been trapped.
There's a dumb waiter. Someone sends food up once a day.
At the office, Billy tries to call for news of Jake's possibly having been admitted to a hospital and tells Elizabeth he still hopes that Jake will turn up safe. Elizabeth has just put a comforting hand on his when Allison rolls up and clenches at the sight of this chaste skin-on-skin contact and does the tongue thing again. She pretends the reason she came over is work-related and then asks if there's any news on Jake and then gets all annoyed that Elizabeth didn't somehow know that Allison also knows Jake. Like, bitch, Elizabeth doesn't watch the show. She couldn't know this. Shut up. God. Anyway. By night, the Coast Guard searches and finds what they think is a body, but is actually a living Jake clutching an overturned lifeboat. Phew. Back at the complex, Jake's neighbors discuss how Palmer must have forced Jake to take him out in the boat. Duh. And Joe feels empathetic for Amanda, given what kind of upbringing she must have had. And then Jake himself walks in and everyone rushes up to greet him. Obviously, the person he wants to talk to is Amanda, which disappoints Joe. Amanda's overjoyed to see him alive. He tells her to sit down so he can talk to her. And she's pretty sure her dad is back on the lam, given the tape. And if he paid Jake, it's fine. But he tells her what actually happened. He doesn't sugarcoat it, but he ends by saying he is sorry. And the next day, he goes with Amanda to the morgue to identify the body, which the guy warns her is in a shocking condition, but not so shocking that Amanda can't tell it's him, apparently. And at Shooters that night, Joe complains to Allison about wanting to run to Jake now that he's alive, and Allison encourages her not to play it cool. Joe, happened the last time you took this nitwit's advice? I am just saying. And while they're talking, Billy walks in with Elizabeth in a bright red tank dress, because the 90s. Allison goes right over to pull him away and yell at him. Billy is unrepentant. They're dating other people, aren't they? And she guesses they are, but did he have to date someone Allison works with? Also, his direct report, which seems inappropriate after 2 days, whatever. Billy bitterly recaps the arc of their relationship and blames his current circumstances entirely on Allison, so no, he doesn't care that it bothers her if he is dating Elizabeth. And then, clip 5.
What do you see in her anyway?
She's you. 2 years ago.
Oh!
You're a piece of shit. Fuck you.
Real bad. Like, 2 years ago before I recovered memories of my childhood sexual abuse? Cool, dude.
Yeah, which made you feel that I was being selfish, so you dumped me?
Yeah. Good luck to you both.
Yeah.
Enjoy each other. So Jake walks Amanda back up to her place where she thanks him for coming with her to the morgue. She doesn't know what's worse, death or damnation. She also doesn't know how long Palmer would have lasted in prison or as a fugitive. So maybe he actually is better off dead, although she doesn't say the last part. Then she kisses Jake, but only briefly before he says they aren't thinking clearly right now and they've both been through hell. She asks him not to do this right now. She needs him. But he can't just turn it off and turn it on. His life is going down the tubes. He just lost everything. What he needs right now is to be by himself, he says. Like, is it? I think that's the last thing you need, actually. But he says he's not abandoning her as he leaves. Which is very funny writing. Anyway. The next morning, Joe goes to see Jake and tell him it hurt her feelings when he barely said two words to her before going up to see Amanda. And Jake does not handle this with as much grace as he could. Clip six.
Your feelings? I come back from being trashed at gunpoint and almost killed. And all you can think about is how I didn't make enough small talk with you before I went up to Amanda's. Is that really the important issue here?
Yes, it is. Okay, Jake? It's about priorities and commitment, consistency, communication, all the C words that go out the window when it comes to me.
I have really had it with all the petty garbage around here. All of you. You just keep rehashing it. You sling it from one apartment to the next. You know, self-absorption is a bottomless pit in this place.
Cold son of a bitch. You are surrounded by people who care about you.
Yeah, after they care about number one. All this support, Joe, it's turning me into a stone. I have tried my entire life to do right by people, and no matter how hard I try, it keeps getting turned around on me. I think that Amanda's got the right idea. You don't help anybody, don't take any help.
You're kidding yourself, Jake. You know, I used to think that I was the one that had a problem with commitment. Believing that things could be as they seem to be, but it's not me, it's you. And you are so full of self-pity that you can't even see what's around you. And don't expect me to be here the next time one of your businesses blows up.
I've had it. With you, with relationships, with this whole city. Go!
Fine. Have a nice life.
This is silly. Like, she's just trying to be a friend. I really think he is overreacting, and this does not scan with his character.
I mean, I see his point that he's like, I was just kidnapped, and then my livelihood was blown up and sank, and I almost died. Like, I mean...
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Right.
But then it winds up in this whole, like, yeah, I mean, I agree with you.
This is of a piece with his whole, like, where they have placed him in, and I mean, like, as a chess piece in this season, where it's like, I don't believe in relationships now, arms crossed. Like, what? Where it's like, and that now you don't believe in friends either? Like, this is just nonsense talk, which, again, only in soaps.
Yeah. Also, this is literally how they sent Brandon on his Thanksgiving road trip. So it's like, no one appreciates, I try to do the right thing and no one cares. And
you're
it's
right.
Like, do you? I mean, we don't, but do you? Also, bye.
Yeah, you're right. At D&D, Allison is talking strategy with one of their other clients, Johnson LaRue, when Elizabeth rolls up. Billy tells her to stay and listen. Allison only clenches a little as she goes on about the chairman's philanthropy and blah, blah, blah. Allison asks Elizabeth to pull a LaRue personnel file, and when she's gone, she bitches at Billy that it's inappropriate to include Elizabeth on their strategy discussion, which it is. Like, she's your assistant. Like, doesn't she need to know this stuff in order to assist you and also maybe move up in the agency? Billy counters that she's sharp and has great ideas. The more efficient she is, the better they'll be. Like, again, I hate to, much as you hate to say in Allison's defense, I hate to say Billy is right.
Yeah,
but he is.
No, he is.
And Allison wants to know if this means that he and Elizabeth are an item now, but he's not going to discuss it with her. So Allison says someone from the office asked her out and she's probably going to go, and Billy doesn't care. No one does.
No,
but
because
as long as
this person is in Canada, you don't know him.
Right. He's at the Moncton office. Yeah. As long as they're being transparent, there's one more thing. Elizabeth saw the framed photo of Allison and Billy on Allison's desk, and it makes her uncomfortable, so Billy would appreciate it if Allison would take it down. Which, first of all, Allison, take it down yourself, like you broke up. Second, mind your business, Elizabeth, if you actually did say that, which I suspect you didn't. I suspect this is Billy ascribing this to Elizabeth, which, not cool. Like, just say you would like Allison to take it down, and that would be way less weird and not throwing your assistant under the bus.
Or wait for her to leave and throw it in the same dumpster Kimberly is supposed to use for the wig and the dress that she wore to run over Michael, and then pretend that it was housekeeping. Do I have to think of everything?
That's a great point, honestly. That night, Jake stops by Matt's door to ask him to pass his apartment keys on to Amanda and tell her to keep the security deposit. He doesn't know where he's going, but they say when your luck's bad, there's two things you can do. Change your name or change your life.
No one says that. Okay.
He gives Matt a sturdy handshake, telling him to take care of himself, and strides out to his motorcycle to zoom into an uncertain future. See you next week. On to our A plot. Michael screws over all his ex-wives and chooses his next one poorly. Having decided to commit to the dick version of Michael despite his having nearly killed her by accident, but still, Kimberly is fully dickmatized at the beach house on her day off, rhapsodizing about how great their day has been and it's only just begun. She wants their relationship to be official, but they can't until he's divorced from Sydney. He claims he's working on it. She then squeals that she can't wait to move out of LA. Their transfer should come through in a few days. She suggests that they can invent entire pasts and be anyone they want to be, as though that would be appealing to someone who just recovered from amnesia. But he points that out and also says he doesn't want to move, and he expects her to make him breakfast now. And she looks at him like, oh no, I fucked up.
So good.
Because she did. Then we're at the hospital, where Michael is surprising Matt with the news that he got his memory back and his job and Kimberly, and everything is great. Nervously, Matt asks how much Michael remembers, and Michael shrugs, it's everything other than a couple of RBIs. That's just for you, Sarah.
I know. Thank you, writers.
Matt pulls him aside to try to get him to leave Kimberly under cover of darkness. Matt will help him, but Michael laughs that everything's fine and that Matt should keep his nose out of other people's business. Hey, man, you're the one who started this conversation. But Matt is aghast. Clip 7.
What are you saying, Michael? That you know about Kimberly and that you're still back together with her? How can you stay with a woman who tried to kill you?
Do I judge your lifestyle, Matt?
I mean, that's a shitty thing to say, but the delivery.
Oof. It is. My notes are literally you, but also he. Because.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Not to say homosexuality is a kink. It's not. But Matt, don't kink shame Michael and Kimberly. They like what they like. You know?
Yeah. Also, okay. They're going to end up killing each other and then you're off the hook for everything. So just stay out of the way.
Honestly, let this play out and happen as it's going to happen. Like, no one is involving you anymore. Just be happy.
Yeah. Although that's the only way he can even get a storyline on the show. Poor kid.
It's true. Over to the studio, where Jane is wearing a garment that is, for real, kind of indecent, even for lingerie. You can see it in the visual aids. It is like a Miss Hannigan dress, but like cut off well above the knee. It is not day wear at all. When Michael busts in to tell Sydney he wants a divorce, she refuses. With Jane standing right there, he basically threatens to let Kimberly loose on her, whatever that may mean. Just kidding, we all know, if she doesn't comply. But Sydney is not cowed, and Jane calmly says that they'll think about what they want and get back to him. And normally I would say this is an A and B conversation you should see your way out of, Jane, but it's Sydney, so I'll allow it. And then Chris shows up at Jane's the next morning to have breakfast with her. Sydney comes out from the back without acknowledging Chris until he says good morning and she throws him a cold hello before going back to ignoring him to talk divorce strategy with Jane. Michael owes her, but he doesn't actually own anything that she could try to claim. Jane suggests she could base her terms on his salary, and then someone hits Chris's buzzer, apparently. Clip 8.
I've got a better idea. Why don't you ask for Michael's interest in the business, then sell it to Jane?
Personally, I think that's a great idea. Speaking of owing people, what do you want me to say, Jane? I owe you everything, and you're right, as usual. Okay? I'm sorry. I didn't mean it that way.
No, I'm sorry. You have always done more than you had to. You took me in, you gave me this job, and it's about time I repaid you.
I mean
yeah, like in the last episode, Sydney is like not at work for like the first 3 days of her required employment. Mm-hmm. The next time we see her, she's wearing something horrendous and she's on a sewing machine.
Yeah.
Like there's helping. Also, there's a number of shots of Jane Mancini designs in this episode where it's clear that like 20 people work there.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. It's not clear. Like, is this a studio or is this actually like a shop, you know, like where they're making things? Unclear. There's not a lot of thought has been put into the actual nature of this business and how it works.
No, especially not in the way that they're dressing the CEO.
No. The other thing about this is that, like, you know, there's... And we have talked about this ad nauseum. I can't believe I'm bringing it up again. But like, if you were Sydney's sister, you would be better at knowing how to talk to her. Like, if this were something that you wanted her to do, you wouldn't say, like, speaking of repaying people, like, you would know that's not going to get you the result that you want, you know? Like,
yeah. No.
There are ways to, and this is going to make me sound like so shitty. I don't mean it in the way that like I manipulate people that I love. I don't. I definitely don't. But there are ways to appeal to people like where they live and, you know, based on what they want and how they are most likely to react favorably. And Sydney's not going to. This is not an emotional appeal that's going to resonate with Sydney because it's only going to put her back on her heels to remind her that like Jane is up and Sydney is down.
Yeah. I mean, just one of the myriad examples of TV writers across genres not apparently having siblings.
Right.
Because they just like, there's always just so much creepy shit happening.
Yeah.
You know, the Walsh twins. All right. That's not really, that's not the writer's fault, but like,
right. But like when their
Fox
dad
Mulder,
was, in,
like, this is just not how, it's not how siblings relate to each other, but yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, especially a personality like Sydney's, it's like Jane and her parents would be experts at figuring out how to make Sydney, who doesn't really like to do anything except get attention.
Mm-hmm.
How to, you know, harness that to get the results that they want because they've all lived together for 20 years. Like,
exactly.
I don't know.
Like when their dad was in town, when we had that, when we got the scene with the three of them and in the jail, like she was so pitifully happy that he was there because it meant he regarded her as being in the family still. And so like, that's the angle that you play. If you're Jane, like, if this works out, you can be part of this business in a more meaningful way. Like, if we've seen her in the studio or whatever, like, if we know that she can sew, we already saw her working for Kay before. Like, maybe this is something that Sydney is actually interested in doing. Like, Jane, work that angle if that's what you want to happen. But, you know, she doesn't because this is a soap.
Yeah. And also, it's Jane. And Jane is probably the dumbest one.
Oh, God. So true. Also, shut up and mind your own business, Chris. Damn. Anyway, as soon as they have both left, Sydney gets on the phone and calls Michael to set up a meeting for that night, someplace very expensive, because as soon as Jane said she wanted something, Sydney shut down and decided she was going to try and work around her instead, because Jane is not good at working with Sydney. Uh-duh. At Montezino's, the one nice restaurant on Melrose Place, Michael turns on the charm with Sydney while she rolls her eyes at his claims that he totally would reconcile with her, except that he was with Kimberly first. She should just take the $5,000 he's offering and sign the divorce papers. Sydney is incredulous that Michael is staying with Kimberly out of guilt. Clip 9.
You can't for a minute believe that Kimberly is helpless. If they had to invade Normandy again, they'd put her in charge. You said you loved me. before Kimberly came back. You said you knew we could be happy. If anyone needs you, Michael, it's me.
I don't know, Sid. It seems to me it might be just as nuts as she is.
I saw her drug you, Michael. I know everything she did. How could you stay with her?
Reasons you could never comprehend.
I'm willing to give you everything. You don't understand.
No, you don't understand. If we went to court, you'd probably get nothing. You were arrested for prostitution, Sydney. You signed a confession that said you tried to kill me. I'm only offering this money because I have a heart of gold.
This is California, Michael. Future earnings, community property. But I don't want any of it. I don't want your property. I don't want your money. I don't want a divorce. I just want you.
Yes. And I want you to take the money.
Well, that's really too bad then, isn't it? Because I want your share of the business. You have until tomorrow, or I'll sic a lawyer on you that'll take full advantage of California law. I love LA.
Why can't you stick the landing?
He yeah.
Can't be that good in bed. Can't.
Can't he?
I mean, I guess he is, but Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I wish they had spelled out more like the lawyer thing that is that California is a community property state and they didn't have a prenup. So, like, that's why the lawyer thing would make a bigger difference.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. Maybe people know that. This was post LA law. So perhaps people were already very aware of California divorce laws, thanks to Arnie Becker and his work.
Yeah. Well, and also thanks to Elizabeth Taylor being married a gazillion times. Like,
sure. I think
that's just something people knew about, like, Los Angeles. I'm not sure everyone understood that the whole state benefited or not from this. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
So back at her place, Jane takes a break from making out with Chris on the couch to say how intimidated she was by him when she first met him because of how accomplished he was. He claims to have been impressed by her talent and that his mind reels at the thought of what they can achieve together. This makes her hornier than ever, but suddenly he says it's getting late and he's got to head home, and she and her blue balls are obviously very disappointed. In the kitchen,
are we supposed to think that they haven't done it yet?
Based on her reaction, I think yes.
But okay.
But yes, they are being like, if you haven't very done subtle it yet, about it, if so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I assume we're supposed to think that, but, like, if you haven't done it yet, then definitely don't be inflicting your PDA on everybody at the office. I mean, yes. Don't do that anyway, but, like,
no.
Just, oh, God.
Right.
Go to an empty floor in the same building and take care of this, please. You're adults.
In the kitchen the next morning, in a very weird outfit, you cut a picture of this. Do you want to describe it?
I'm not sure I can. I mean, first of all, she's got a very tall, like simultaneously tall and flat flip happening. Mm-hmm. The hair that's not, it ages her. And then there's some kind of like harlequin stripe slash couch paisley thing. I mean, I can't describe it, like the way the garment is built, and it's like all the patterns are beige, but then there's also like a translucent curtain material sleeve.
Right.
I mean, it's really bad. It's really, really, really bad. And I think it was in the sewing machine in the previous scene. Like,
oh, you know what? I think this whole situation, because it's like an apron thing too. I think it's what she was wearing in the scene when Michael shows up. Like, I think it was earlier in the episode, but still, it is in the visual aids, and it is bad. Yeah. It's very country crafty.
Yeah, and it's definitely of its time.
Like, but it's not her. It's not Sydney looking.
Yeah, no. I mean, maybe during her like Nancy Reagan transformation when she and Michael first got married, but
yes,
no.
Anyway, Sydney tries to dodge Jane while she insists that Sydney needs a lawyer to represent her in the divorce from Michael, because of course she does. But Sydney says he wants her out of his life more than she wants him out of hers, so he'll come around. Jane gives Sydney one more day, and then she's hiring a lawyer. Why? What is wrong with you people? Hire lawyers. It is what they are for. But yeah, as soon as Jane is left for work, Sydney calls Michael to ask if he's going to give her what she wants. And he is, but he wants to meet to talk terms. So she does go to meet him in a hotel room. Oh, Sydney.
Why?
And in the time it takes her to say that neutral territory generally doesn't have a king size bed in the middle of it, he has taken off the shirt that he had on to answer the door. He replies that it's neutral until the first shot's fired, and then turns her around and starts kissing her. And she engages for a second before saying they can't. But he asks her to sit on the bed and starts running game. Clip 10.
You were right all along about how I feel about you, about Kimberly, about all of it. I'm not staying with Kimberly out of guilt. I'm staying with her because I'm afraid not to. The woman is crazy. She followed me to dinner the other night and saw us together. I think she tried to kill me again this afternoon. Sid, if I don't prove that I'm divorced, I'm afraid she'd not only hurt me, she'd hurt you. And I can't let that happen. I need time to get her to trust me. And then I'll either get her transferred or get her to want to leave me. But we need her trust to get rid of her, Sid. You want a truth? There it is.
I don't know which one of you is crazier.
I do.
Yeah. I mean, this is a guy who knows how to talk to Sydney and get what he wants. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Granted, he's just lying his face off. But, you know, there's a version of this where it's like, you just tell some of the truth, Jane.
Yeah.
Anyway, he keeps kissing on her and cooing that she's his soulmate. It's the only way they can be safe. She has to help him. Signing the papers is the only way they can be together. She has to do it for them. Blah, blah, blah. And then clip 11.
Oh, thanks, babe. I appreciate it. You just relinquished all rights. I love LA too.
How could you do this to me? I've taken the fall for you. I've given you everything I had.
Right, and expected nothing in return.
You never loved me?
Here's your $5,000. Taking money for not having sex. New low, don't you think?
You suffer for this, Michael. I swear I'll make you suffer.
But will you? I mean,
will you?
I don't see it.
Yeah. Also, I know the show is not going to stop sex worker shaming her, but I really wish it would, because it's gross.
It is gross. But thanks, babe.
I don't, and you can tell she's sort of like looking down and scrawling on the paper, and it's like, oh girl, like you have to know.
You have to know. You have to. But he's so good. He's just such a good liar. Like he's convincing. He sells it. Oh God. Jane's outfit at the office the next day. It's like the top half of Demi Moore's Indecent Proposal dress turned into a crop top plus a beret. It's not okay. You can see in the visual aids, but I wouldn't approve it.
Yeah, the beret also looks like it mated with a surgical scrub cap and then its child shat on her head. Like, why? The hair is finally where you want it.
It's true.
Guess not.
So she announces to a sulky Sydney that she has made an appointment with a lawyer and that they all are going that afternoon. Obviously, she can tell something's already up, though. Clip 12.
Just tell me that you didn't wind up giving him my share of the business, too.
You want to know what happened? It's really unbelievable, Jane. It's putty in my hands. He agreed to everything. He's calling his lawyer this morning, and his lawyer's calling me this afternoon.
Sid, now I swear, if you're lying.
I'm not lying, Jane. You said that a deal's not a deal until it's signed, and that's the only reason I hesitated saying anything.
So he agreed to everything?
Yes.
Good for you. You do know him better than I do.
Well, I guess he just wanted me out of his life badly enough.
Well, congratulations to the both of us.
Yeah, it's really great.
I'm going to cancel this appointment with the law firm. You better have this under control.
Jane, this is... were you dropped on your head this morning? Is that why you're wearing this goofy hat? Like, oh, now I'll believe you, Sydney.
Ugh, yeah. I mean, but Sydney, like, you're going to be found out. Like, this is like teenagery magical thinking lying.
This is like 5-year old.
It's true. Yeah. Where it's like, I just need to get through this conversation.
Yeah.
And then I can't think any further than that about what's going to happen when I say I'm not lying. And it's clearly going to be proved that I am 20 minutes from now. And, you know, as we know, turns out Sydney does not have this under control, as Jane learns later that day when Michael strides in, starts going over the books, bitching about what they're spending on fabric, and announcing that he's not out of the business after buying Sydney off $4,000 or $5,000. And as Sydney cowers in the corner, Michael guesses that she didn't tell them, and Jane knows it's true. Michael crows that the business is a real moneymaker, LOL. At this rate, he'll be able to buy the beach house in a matter of months. And Sydney quietly tells Jane she tried, but Jane shuts her down. Clip 13.
Sid, I am so tired of getting stabbed in the back and hearing you're sorry.
Some things never change, do they, Jane?
Get the hell out of here, Michael.
I believe you made your point, Doctor.
You're right. Eddie? I've got patients to see, lots of them. Nice try, Jane. But you see, I'm growing to love the fashion business. See you, Sid. Thanks for everything.
Jane, I'm sorry. I should have listened to you. You knew I could never win with him. He's never going to give up the business, Jane. He wants to be a part of your life any way he can. Can't you see that?
We have to do this again? Fucking figure out something else for Jane to do, please.
Please. God, really?
Anyway, that's the end. So let's name our episode MVP. Fucking Michael. He did it. He needed to do it, and he did.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
I mean, I really can't believe he's still getting away with it. It's not as egregious as it is later, when like everyone should know not to ever be in the same room with him, because apparently he's fucking Kilgrave, but
right
now, okay, sure.
Least valuable player. I feel like we have a million choices.
Oh God, we really do.
I'm gonna say Jane, the fucking idiot. Frog marked your sister to the lawyer. Don't trust her to do anything. Like, well, I'll give you a day. No, you won't.
No. In fact, don't let her around Michael at all, because you know what happens.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm going to say Allison.
Yeah, fair. That was my other choice. So obnoxious. So annoying.
Oh, God. Like, you're on a soap. Raise your game, will ya? This does not occur next time on Again With This. Allison gets Elizabeth fired. We get another heaping helping of Jake's daddy issues. Chris gets overtly gross, finally. And Frisco Jones gets the WITSEC assignment of a fucking lifetime. New hospital chief of staff, Dr. Peter Burns, enters stage right. Your lunch may be exiting stage left after you peep Sydney's outfit in our visual aids. We do those for every single episode of Again With This. You'll find those on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you'll find a link to buy our very special 90210 book, available in all formats. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and think about moving your desk over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Tons of extra content, so slap that photo face down and join today. I'm top priority Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is community property state truther Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer David T. Cole better have this under control. Talk to you next time.